Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us at the Central and Janesville podcast. Please remember to check us out on centraljanesville.com throughout the week. We're excited for wherever God's got you at right now, and we hope this message brings you a little closer. Thanks. I want to start off this morning by asking you if you've ever been in that place in life, you hear something or you're watching something and it just makes you question everything. I was at a track meet on Friday night. It's getting towards the end of the track meet, and in the middle of the big gym that we're in, all of a sudden there's all these kids that are gathering around and they're kind of going crazy. They're playing a game that I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's called shadow boxing. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I'm not gonna lie. Like, these kids are doing this and like doing all that. I don't even understand it. And I'm watching it. And then all of a sudden, a kid would do something like this, and then the whole crowd would go, "Oh!" And I was like, "That's dumb. What is becoming of our young people? I don't know what they're doing anymore. It doesn't even make sense to me." I was looking on the internet for statements that make people like just wonder. The best ones I found were, why is a fire truck called a fire truck when all it carries is water? That's good. It's impossible to expect the unexpected because if you expect the unexpected is expected. That one I actually like. I'm not going to lie. I was thinking about it for a while. I was like, oh, that's true. I don't know. That. Sometimes maybe your kid does something that makes you rethink everything as a parent. They say something and you're thinking to yourself, like, seriously, where did I go wrong? Like, what did I do to have you say something like that? There's questions that come about. Things that happen that bring about the big questions for all of us. Like, the first time that I brought Abby, my oldest daughter, here to, she got her temporary license, and we're like, okay, we need to figure out how to drive. We bring her to the parking lot here. And as she's driving, I'm thinking, can I just drive her until she's 30? Because this is not going well. Things like that, when you're questioning, like, keeping your kid in your house and driving them around every day until they're 30, that's desperation, and you're thinking about the big things at that point. Maybe you've got a little bit of a conspiracy theory in you. You're a conspiracy theorist at heart, and maybe you've watched YouTube videos too late at night about UFO sightings, and the next day you're going to work, and you're like, there are so many UFOs out there and aliens. And you watch these conspiracy theories enough, they all sound a little bit legit, and you start to go crazy. Or maybe you were sitting in your bed at night as a little kid trying to think about eternity. I don't know if you've ever gotten into that place where you're trying to think through what eternity is like. And you're like, okay, we're in heaven for a little while, and then it's done. And they're like, no, that's not eternity. It keeps going on and going on. And these hard questions, these big questions get us thinking beyond what we're even capable of sometimes. And in the lead up to the Easter story, we're continuing to look at the stories that lead up to Jesus' death and resurrection. And the story that we're going to look at today, there's two guys who face life-altering questions that they have to go through. The questions really are, what are they going to do with Jesus? It's a question that you and I, we all have to face. What are we going to do with Jesus? And it's not just a question that we face one time. I think it's a question that we face moment by moment throughout every single day of our lives. Am I going to put Jesus first? Am I going to make him Lord? Or am I going to live my life for me? These are questions that we are constantly bombarded with. Even for longtime followers of Jesus, it's a question that we're going to have to answer every single day. Who am I going to give my life to? We can decide that we're following Jesus and it's a concrete decision and we're saved by grace. We don't have to be perfect or make every right decision. But the truth is still in every moment, every decision that we come across, what am I going to decide about Jesus right now? And so today we're looking at a story of two guys. Their names are Pilate and Herod. And they come together in a story. The reason we're talking about them both is because they both come in really in the same story. It kind of is intertwined, their story, in the story of Easter. It all comes back to, what do they believe about Jesus? What are they willing to believe is the truth about Jesus? And I think we're going to see actually three answers to that question of what you think truth is, what you think Jesus is. We're going to see three answers that kind of are the wrong answers for us. Sometimes it's good for us to see the wrong answers so that we can actually see what the right answers are. And so that's what we're going to see with these guys. And we're going to come to their story in Luke chapter 23. But before we get there, at the end of Luke chapter 22, we're at a place where the chief priests and the teachers of the law, they've come together, they're gathering together, and they're questioning Jesus. And they're not happy with Jesus. They're trying to figure out how they're going to kill Jesus. And it says in Luke 22, verse 70, they all asked him, "Are you the Son of God?" And he replied, "You say that I am." And then they answered, "Why do we need any more testimony? We've heard it from his lips." And it might seem a little weird. Like, why would they get so mad that he said, "You say that I am"? Well, there is, if you look back at the word for God in the Old Testament, the great I am. He's the great I am. And Jesus really was saying in this moment, you're asking me if I'm the Son of God? I am. And he used that same verbiage that would be found for the name of God. And so they got upset. And so these guys, they are deciding, okay, how in the world are we going to find a way to make sure that we can get Jesus killed? They were beside themselves. And so the next step for them was, we're going to take Jesus to the Roman authorities. We can't ourselves kill Jesus, and so we've got to take him to the Roman authorities and let that happen by their hand. And so we come to Luke chapter 23, starting in verse 1. It says, "Then the whole assembly rose and led him off to Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, 'We have found this man subverting our nation. He opposes payment of taxes to Caesar and claims to be Messiah, a king.' So Pilate asked Jesus, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' 'You have said so,' Jesus replied. The Pilate announced to the chief priests and the crowd, 'I find no basis for a charge against this man.' But they insisted, 'He stirs up the people all over Judea by his teaching. He started in Galilee and he's come all the way here.' On hearing this, Pilate asked if the man was a Galilean. When he learned that Jesus was under Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at the same time." Now, this is not the only time that we're going to hear from Pilate in this story. He's going to come back after he sends him to Herod. It's going to get sent back to Pilate. So we're going to hear from him twice. But there's something that we should observe in this first interaction between Pilate and Jesus. Pilate, the first time, he wants any reason whatsoever not to have to deal with Jesus. He doesn't want to have to deal with Jesus. This is actually, I think, a common theme for people when it comes to figuring out what truth in life is, figuring out who Jesus is. This is a common theme for a lot of people. And the theme in a nutshell is this: people think, "I don't even want to face the possibility that Jesus is the truth." You've probably been in conversations with friends before, or even family members, and it just feels like it's a pilot situation. They don't even want to face the option that Jesus might be the truth. Now, to kind of understand this, what's going on here, we should probably understand, make sure we know who Pilate is exactly. Pilate is, he's a guy named Pontius Pilate. He's what they call the procurator of Judea. All that means really is he was the Roman governor, the person in the Roman government who was in charge of this province. This province included Jerusalem. He usually didn't live in Jerusalem. He lived in Caesarea. But around the time of the religious festivals, he would come to Jerusalem. And what he would do is he would bring a bunch of troops with him, because thousands of people would be coming into Jerusalem during these religious festivals. And so his job was to keep the peace. It's like, it's all he cared about. If he kept the peace, then he could stay in power, he could stay in his position, and the Roman higher-ups would be okay with what he was doing. Also, though, as the procurator, he had full control when it came to capital punishment sentences. The Sanhedrin, these chief priests, these religious leaders, they would come to him and say, "This person, we think this person should be executed." Pilate didn't have to listen to them. He had full control on this. He had the power for someone to be executed or to not be executed. And so he was a leader who, more than anything else, what he wanted to do, like I said, he wanted to keep the peace in Judea. He wanted the Roman government above him to be like, hey, he's keeping the peace, he's doing everything, he can keep his power. And people who have power, they want to keep their power. If there's anything that you know about politics in our country, people stay in the Senate until they're 145 years old. There's a reason. People like power. They want to stay in power. It's no different for this dude. Pontius Pilate wanted to stay in power. And because of that, Historians talk about how he was rigid, he was stubbornly harsh, he was spiteful, he was full of wrath for the people that were under him. He took bribes, he was violent. One historian says that he was ceaseless in and grievous in his brutality. So this is not a good dude, really, by any means. And so when Jesus comes before Pilate, he's got one simple reaction. He's thinking, how can I get rid of Jesus as quickly as possible? How can I just not have to deal with him? This is a problem. Jesus was a contentious figure. People around were starting to follow him, and he's thinking, well, if it gets out of hand too much, this could be bad for me. This could be bad. They're not going to see me as a good leader taking care of the peace around here. And so what did Pilate do with Jesus? His initial response was to get him out of his sight as fast as he possibly could. The moment that he heard Jesus was a Galilean, he's like, oh, okay, well, Herod is actually the one in charge of Galilee, so I can send him that way. And so that's the first thing he does, is he's like, I'm going to get Jesus out of my sight. You ever notice how we like to get things out of our sight, out of our presence, and then it's like it wasn't really there at all? I don't know about you, but I'm kind of like that. I like to not think about things until the very moment that I need to think about them sometimes. When I grew up, man, I was an absolutely worrywart. I worried about everything that could be worried about. I'd go to bed as a little kid at 9 o'clock. I'd be up until 11:30 because I was just worrying about stuff all the time. Worried about stuff like crazy. And the day before my first day of sixth grade, I was laying in bed, awake at night, worrying about stuff like crazy. The thing I was worried about is it was going to be my first time ever having a locker at school. And the only thing I could think of was, I'm going to get stuffed in that locker tomorrow. I was 4 feet 2 inches tall, you guys. Why would an eighth grader not come and stuff me in a locker at my first day of school? And that was what was going on in my head. I was worried about it like crazy. Now, that did not happen. But a couple eighth graders did come out onto the playground. And the moment I got on the playground, they yelled out at me, hey, Kellen, why are you such a loser? And they actually used a word that was way worse than that I can't say at church. And all I did in response was I went like this. 4-2, and I was just waving them to come to me. And they did. They ran me down and they took my glasses, you guys. I am not at all traumatized by it. I'm only talking about it, you know, 30 years later as a 43-year-old man. Not traumatized at all. So I used to worry about stuff like crazy. And somewhere along the way, I don't know if it was around high school or college, but I decided, I'm like, I just want to push things out of my mind and not worry about them until I absolutely have to think about them. There are also drawbacks to that, right? It's kind of what you see with Pilate here. He doesn't want to think about Jesus, doesn't want to worry about Jesus, doesn't want to have to face the fact of who Jesus actually might be, and so he pushes him out of his presence, pretending like he's not even there. I don't have to deal with the issue. It's like for me, if my car is running, it doesn't matter that it's making that sound. I'm just going to keep on going with it. It's going to be okay. My finances aren't looking so great, but there's no creditors calling, asking for stuff back. I'll just keep on going. My spiritual life, it's not looking super great right now, but I'm pretty sure I'm not going to die today, so I'll get it figured out later. That might seem like an exaggeration, but that is actually how we tend to deal sometimes with the big questions of life, the truth questions that we need to be facing. When it comes to living according to what Jesus says for us, to living according to his truth for our lives, we're lying to ourselves if we don't admit that sometimes we want to just push him aside and pretend like he's not there, not talking to us. Do you ever find yourself not wanting to face the possibility that Jesus is trying to lead you into his truth and away from your version of truth? It's a tough thing to admit. Yeah, God, I've been living exactly how I want to live and pushing you completely away. Truth is, in a room this size, even though we're all here to grow in our walk with Jesus, there's somebody in this room who has been absolutely pushing Jesus away, pushing the truth of what he's trying to speak into our lives. We're pushing it away, ignoring it like it's not even there. We act like there's another version of truth that we are allowed to live out, that we don't have to live out the truth that Jesus calls us to live. You and I, we might not be political leaders like Pilate was, but we still, I think, struggle with the same things that Pilate was struggling with in this first interaction with Jesus. When it comes down to it, how often do you like to push Jesus away rather than letting yourself be faced with the truth of what he's speaking to our lives? Being faced with the truth of who Jesus actually is. Pilate wanted to push Jesus away. Just wanted to not even have to deal with him. And a lot of that was because I think he knew deep down that there was incredible ramifications that would take place if he actually took this Jesus and listened to what he was saying. He didn't want to have to face the changes in life that he might have to face. Again, I think that we all sit in that place sometimes ourselves. And so what did Pilate do? He sent him off to Herod. Tried to get him out of his company. And so I want to read what happened when he went to Herod, okay? So Luke chapter 23, starting in verse 8. It says, when Herod saw Jesus, he was greatly pleased because for a long time he'd been wanting to see him. From what he had heard about him, he hoped to see him perform a sign of some sort. He plied him with many questions, but Jesus gave him no answer. The chief priests and the teachers of the law were standing there vehemently accusing him. Then Herod and his soldiers ridiculed and mocked him. Dressing him in an elegant robe, they sent him back to Pilate. That day, Herod and Pilate became friends. Before this, they had been enemies. So Herod, what's his deal? He wants Jesus to do things for him, and so he treats Jesus as though he's nothing more than a commodity. Jesus is nothing more than somebody that can entertain him a little bit. And again, I think this is a common theme for people that are seeking out truth, that are trying to, they say they're seeking out Jesus. Here's that theme in a nutshell. People think, I want Jesus to conform to what I want to be true. I want Jesus to conform to whatever I want to be true of him. I'm going to put the way I interpret Jesus, I'm going to interpret him the way that I want to interpret him. That's a dangerous place for us to get to. That's exactly where Herod was. I think there's something really, really ugly about Herod's response to Jesus in this passage. It's like he has a desire just to put Jesus up in front of him and have him do tricks, have him entertain him. And it's kind of gross. But it falls in line with the character that we see of Herod throughout the parts of Scripture that we see. There's actually a number of different people that are called Herod. This Herod is Herod the Tetrarch. His name is Antipas. You might remember a story from him in the New Testament. He actually divorced his wife so that he could marry his sister, his brother's wife. It's a crazy messed up situation. It's hard to even remember, okay? So he marries his brother's wife, and John the Baptist, you might remember, got really upset about that. He came to him, he's like, you can't be marrying your brother's wife. You gotta stop this. You gotta fix this stuff. One day he had his now stepdaughter, he brought her out to entertain him and his guests. She was dancing for him. He was pleased. He said, hey, I'll do whatever you'll give up to half my kingdom to you. The girl's mom, Herod's new wife, said, hey, why don't you ask him for John the Baptist's head on a platter? And so he went ahead and he had John the Baptist killed. Herod was not a good dude either. He was messed up in a lot of ways. And in this story, Herod actually seems excited to see if Jesus can do all the things that he's been hearing Jesus do. He has Jesus set up in his head as not a spiritual person, not a figure that can help guide his life to something better. He had Jesus set up as a person of entertainment, a person who could give him something that he wanted to get. I don't think it takes a whole lot of mental exercise to see how that can relate to us as people sometimes. When and how many times have I gone to Jesus and asked him to do the very thing that I want him to do? And when he doesn't do it exactly the way I want him to do, I get upset. And maybe I do exactly what Herod did here, is I start to ridicule and mock, and then I cast him aside. It might not even be that we've asked something for Jesus. Maybe it was that we've wanted to believe something about Jesus. I think we often believe exactly what we want to believe about Jesus. Not what Scripture says about Jesus. I think we have a tendency and a temptation to believe about Jesus exactly what we want to believe about Jesus. And one of those things is we can definitely make the mistake of going, Jesus is just grace. That's all it is. I can do anything I want, and he's just going to keep giving me grace. Now, there's truth in that when we've committed our hearts to Jesus and accepted who he is and what he did on the cross for us, there is grace. But he also calls us into relationship. He calls us into relationship with him that comes through faith. Ephesians 2:8 says, "For it's by grace you've been saved through faith." And we are kidding ourselves if we don't actually think that Jesus calls us into relationship. If we just think, oh, I can do whatever I want, I can live however I want, and grace is just going to be thrown my way all the time. Jesus wants relationship with you and me. Faith matters. And the truth is, Jesus wants you more than anything else. Like, yes, he came and he died on a cross for you. He wants to give you forgiveness of sins. He took on punishment for your sins. That's all good stuff. Jesus took the punishment for your sins for you on the cross. Now he wants you to live in the freedom that his forgiveness affords to you. We don't just take Jesus as this one-time thing where like, oh yes, he has forgiven me and now I'm good and I can just go live my life. That's kind of what Herod was trying to do here. Hey, Jesus, perform something for me so that I can then just go and live the rest of my life and enjoy your entertainment. Jesus is not just a one-time moment thing that we interact with. We're called to take him into our life every moment of every day. Herod was not willing to do that. We treat Jesus like Herod treats him. We ask him to do something for us. We ask him to be our savior and to forgive us, and then sometimes we just walk away from that moment. And we don't pay a whole lot of attention to him. We mock the way that Jesus asks us to live. Put other people ahead of myself? Not today, Jesus. Lay down my life for other people? Not today, Jesus. It's too hard. That's asking too much. But when it comes to truth, what is the truth of what Jesus is calling us to? He's not just calling us to be okay with having our sins forgiven, then go and live in however we want to. It's forgiveness, but then it's living in submission, our lives in submission to him. Herod was given the opportunity to see the truth about Jesus, but all he wanted was a Jesus who would fill the moment-by-moment desires that he had in that moment. You see, Jesus does not need to conform to our desires. His goodness makes him able to conform our desires to his. What are you actually doing with Jesus? Are you trying to have Jesus conform to your desires rather than saying, Jesus, however you want to conform me to you, do it. And that's a really hard place to get to because it's putting ourselves completely in the hands of Jesus. It's submission. But Herod, what Herod did is he had fun with Jesus for a little bit, and when Jesus didn't give him what he wanted, he decided, I'm done with him. I'm going to turn him back over to Pilate. And so he sends him back to Pilate. He's like, I'm not going to do anything with him. Pilate now has to take responsibility himself to decide what he's going to do with Jesus. Again, it's exactly what you and I have to face with our lives. At some point, every single one of us has to take responsibility for what are we going to do with Jesus. And so we read in Luke chapter 23, starting in verse 13. Pilate called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people, and they said to them, "You brought me this man as one who is inciting the people to rebellion. I have examined him in your presence and have found no basis for your charges against him. Neither has Herod, for he sent him back to us. As you can see, he has done nothing to deserve death. Therefore, I will punish him and then release him." But the whole crowd shouted, "Away with this man, release Barabbas to us." Barabbas had been thrown in prison for an insurrection in the city and for murder. Wanting to release Jesus, Pilate appealed to them again, but they kept shouting, "Crucify him, crucify him." For the third time he spoke to them, "Why? What crime has this man committed? I have found in him no grounds for the death penalty. Therefore I will have him punished and then release him." But with loud shouts, they insistently demanded that he be crucified, and their shouts prevailed. So Pilate decided to grant their demand. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, for the one that they asked for, and surrendered Jesus to their will. So Pilate gets to a place he can't not decide something any longer. He's put in that position. He's got to make a decision. And so Pilate, the second time, he believes Jesus might be who he says he is, but he goes along with the crowd anyways. Again, this is a human theme for us. It's something that we see ourselves as people. We see people around us doing all the time. People think, I know Jesus might be true, but I choose to ignore real truth for my truth. People see Jesus, they see him for who he is, and we decide, this could be somebody who chooses not to follow Jesus, this could be you and me who are following Jesus. We see Jesus, we see the truth that he's speaking to us, and still sometimes we say, I'm just gonna ignore it. I'm gonna go along with my truth. It is always easier to side with a truth that fits inside what I want, that comes from me, than to side with a truth that's given to me from someone higher. We question truth when we see it, whether it's from Jesus or whether it's from an authority in our lives. We question it. That's exactly what Pilate does in this conversation. John actually elaborates on this conversation a little bit more. John, in chapter 18 of his gospel, he says that Jesus said to Pilate, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. And then Pilate says the thing that is one of the most powerful statements in the New Testament. He says back to Jesus, what is truth? I think there's a part of Pilate that was really trying to figure out what he believed truth really was. But even though I think he was trying to figure it out, I don't think he cared enough about setting himself aside for that truth. We're all asking the same question, what is truth? And here's something else that I think we find doing that is just like Pilate. We see Jesus, we hear Jesus. We know in our hearts the truth that sometimes he is trying to speak to us, that he holds for us. And still we choose to go a different route. Still we choose to follow our own version. Like we think that we know what's better for us than what Jesus does. And you know what? My heart empathizes with every single one of us in that. My heart empathizes with Pilate when I read this passage. Because it is hard for us to put aside the false truths that we see around us. There are things in this world that is promising us things that are not true promises. We have false truths being spoken to us all around us every single day, and it is promising something for us. But those promises, they don't last. If a promise is not rooted and grounded in Jesus, those promises amazingly fail us every single time. The truth of Jesus is actually all that we've got. I can empathize with Pilate because even though it seemed like he wanted to do what was right, it is so hard to do what's right and go against our instincts of self-preservation and to go against our instincts of fulfilling my own satisfaction. I tell you what, those two things, self-preservation and satisfaction in life, they will win out over us in so many areas of our life, in so many moments. When we try to do the right thing, we try to follow the truth that God has asked us to do. If we're caring about self-preservation and satisfaction, we're gonna go along with our own truth rather than the truth of Jesus. I see it in villains in movies. Sometimes I empathize with the villains in movies. Sometimes I find myself cheering for the villains in movies. I'm a sickly, twisted human being, I think, all right? But I empathize with them because they're doing this evil thing a lot of the time, but they think it's actually for something good. I'm gonna ruin some more movies for you this week, all right? Thanos in the Marvel movies. The dude thinks that if he can wipe out half of the population of the universe, the world is gonna be a better place because there's gonna be that much less opportunity for pain to enter in. Less people around, it's gonna mean less opportunity to hurt other people. Something in his past had decided that to get away from pain was the only way to go, not realizing that he was putting more pain into the world. The Joker. Joker's probably my favorite villain of all time in all the movies. And the chaos and the destruction that he would bring, it was because you look in his past and chaos and destruction was brought into his world. And so now it seemed like it made sense that he'd bring chaos and destruction in. to other people's world. People find unhealthy ways to live because they've given into distorted versions of truth. The only version of truth that leads to true health is going to be Jesus. Some of us, we've been giving into to some distorted versions of what truth is, and it is causing us to live in some ways that are they're actually harmful. Pilate's fear kept him from doing what is right. And I wonder sometimes, how many times is our fear keeping us from following after Jesus in the ways that he calls us to follow him? Pilate asked, what is truth? He thought there was some truth in Jesus. And there's a lot of us where we've bought into, like, I believe Jesus, I believe he's the truth. But in the very moment where we have to make a decision, we decide that the truth that I've got in my head is a lot better for me for some reason. It's amazing how we do that. He knew there was something in Jesus that was right, but he also knew that going along with Jesus, the truth of Jesus, was going to require some crazy life change, and he was not wanting to have anything with that. That kind of acceptance, accepting a new truth that is outside of yourself, that comes from God, it is a scary thing for a lot of people to do. Are you scared of making that kind of change? The kind of change that Jesus is asking you to make. Some of us sitting in here right now, we're like, I know God's been asking me for this area, and I just am not ready. We may not respond the way that Herod and Pilate responded in all situations, but I think some of the time we find ourselves responding in some of the ways that these guys responded to Jesus. Do you sometimes not even want to face the possibility that Jesus has a better truth for you in a given moment of your life? Have you spent months not going to church just because you're like, if I can just pretend like Jesus isn't talking to me and I don't have to hear it, then it's not happening. Do you sometimes want Jesus just to conform to your wants and to your truth? You're trying to put an image onto Jesus of what he is, but it's based simply on what you want him to be. I think we're all guilty of it. I want to follow the Jesus that is true. And if that Jesus tells me, hey, this is something different I have for you, am I going to be open to it? Do you sometimes know the truth of Jesus, but you absolutely ignore that truth altogether? And maybe there's a next step in all of this that we need to take today. Maybe the next step for you is to say, you know what, God, sometimes I run so far from you because I absolutely do not want to, I don't want to let you dig into my life and bring any kind of change. So I run from you. And I know I've been running, but I know right now that I need to dig in and let you work in my heart. I need to let you dig into my life and show me what your truth is. And some of us, maybe we've been running from God all of our lives. We've never even entered into a relationship with Jesus. I'm telling you, it is absolutely an easy thing that you can do. All it takes is to say, you know what, God, I've run from you. I've never accepted you into my life. I want to accept Jesus as my Lord today. It's as simple as that, to accept what Jesus did on the cross for you, to forgive you. And then we get to enter into that relationship with him. God, now that I'm forgiven, help me to walk with you daily. Something that you can do right now while you're sitting in that seat. Maybe you've known exactly the truth that Jesus has for you, and even though you've known it, you still find yourself running. If that's you, maybe your next step today is to say, God, I've been trying to live out my own truth. I've been trying to believe that it's okay for me to live kind of my life apart from you, pretending like I'm fully in on board with you, but I'm really not. Sometimes some of us, we just have to come to that point and say, God, I surrender it all and I submit. Submission to the truth of who Jesus is I think, what he's calling us to today. Jesus doesn't want to tear your life apart and make it worse. He wants to come alongside you. And the change that he brings to your life, it will be worth it every single time. Sometimes we have to let God in. We have to open up our hearts and say, okay, I'm ready for change. God, maybe I'm not ready for change. Maybe the next step for you is to say, God, I'm not ready for change. Open up my heart a little bit more this week so that come next week, I'm a little bit more ready for the change that you have for me. Whatever it is, let's ask God to open up our hearts this week. Let's ask him to make us willing and ready for the change that he wants for us.
Thanks again for joining us on the Central and Janesville podcast. Remember to check us out at centraljanesville.com. Have a great week.